This RFM podcast was brought to you with the support of New Zealand On Air.
Welcome to the Humaning Podcast. I'm your host, Michaela Lloyd, and I love that you're here. From a young age, I've been asking life the big questions, and it's led me down some interesting rabbit holes. I'm going to be sharing with you some of the ideas, theories, practices, and ways of being that have made my life easier, better, and more fulfilling. We're going to explore what it means to be human, from the weird and the wild to the utterly wonderful, and we're going to talk about how we can do it in a way that not only leads to amazing results, but feels good in the process. Come on, let's human together. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Humaning Podcast. I am your host, Michaela Lloyd, and I'm really excited because I'm not just chatting to myself today. I have friends here, and we are talking to the beautiful Monica Ferguson, and we have Marina from Arrow FM in the house, kindly recording us from the comfort of our home. It's a cold, blustery day here in Featherston. We are wrapped up warm. The house smells like baking. We have warm teas in hand. And we're going to be having a fun conversation. Now, I'm so excited to bring on Mon. She is a dear friend of mine. Yes, folks, I do actually have them. And this is my first guest on my podcast ever. Did you know that?
No.
I haven't had any guests. It's just been me talking to myself, having a good time. And now we get to talk. So it's so nice to have you here.
It's so nice to be here. Thank you for having me.
Now, the connoisseurs of Arrow FM will know that Monica Ferguson has her own podcast, the World Domination Podcast, which is Thursday at 2 p.m.
I mean, should I just hire you right now?
Yeah.
You can be my pimp.
I'm on maternity leave. Leave me alone.
That is correct, yes.
Yeah, and so Monica has many hats. You know I refer to human design a lot, and she is a manifesting generator that is amazing at lots of things. In this context, we're sort of drawing on her background. For one thing, as just like a whole human that's led a very interesting life, but as a mindset coach who works with purpose-driven individuals that really just want to follow their heart and kind of like ground in those big ideas and big visions they have into this world, and doing it in a way that they get to bring them whole selves along for the journey. And what I was really excited to bring Mon along today to discuss is kind of like the full spectrum of being human. Like, you know, yes, going after our goals, yes, doing the positive things and the mindset things, but actually not discarding pieces of ourselves. I know that we both come from that coaching industry where there can be a lot of toxic positivity. And usually when we're in that state, we have no idea. And then we realize that, oh, actually, you know, these emotions need to be felt. So what do you feel like sharing? Like, how did you get to that point where you're like, oh, I actually need to feel my feelings. Oh, it's actually okay to look under the hood and, you know, look at those parts of myself that may not be so pretty.
Yeah, good question. I mean, it's quite an unlearning process, eh? Like, when, especially when you've come from that like spiritual, girly, love and light community where it's like we're taught to fear any thought that is not positive. And I started to notice that the days when I would just accept however I felt, like, no matter how ugly that was, no matter if I got out of bed or not, like those really intense emotional days, whenever I allowed myself to do that, I felt so much better within hours. Like, it was that permission to just be where you are. And I guess that's like Eckhart Tolle, you know, he teaches that, like the power of now, like it's all happening now. And it's like when we stop resisting, what you resist persists, right? And it's like we say these things, but then we don't apply them. So all these spiritual girlies that are like, oh yeah, what you resist persists, but then they tell you to resist. And it's like, no, just accept, just embrace it. Because at the end of the day, emotions are just energy in motion. So the quicker we can allow it to move, the quicker we get through onto the other side.
Yeah. Like, I know for me, I was quite a perfectionist when it came to like manifestation. Yep. And living in a quantum world, it's like, if I think negative thoughts, if I feel negative feelings, then I'm going to attract negative results.
Yeah.
And on the one hand, there's truth to that. And on the other hand, when it's an actual denial of what's genuinely going on within you,
yeah,
then it's like, ooh, that was real tricky to unpack.
Yeah. And do you know what? Like, I'm such a geek for the subconscious mind, right? Anyone who knows me, Paul Marina, would have heard me like talk about this every week for the last year. But this is what blew my mind too, right? Because this whole thing about resisting, if it's in our unconscious, it's there, whether we acknowledge it or not. So our power to be like, oh, I actually feel really crap about myself. I actually feel really unworthy or not good enough to sit with that, to take the unconscious into the conscious, is where our power is to change it. But if we can pretend, oh, no, I love myself, but actually you feel like crap, then it's still there. Just because you're not consciously thinking it doesn't mean it's not there. So that, I was like, oh my God, it's there whether I acknowledge it or not. So if I just feel my feelings and then it's gone.
Yeah. And like, we're so much closer in those moments to actually manifesting what we want when we're being realistic about what's actually happening.
Yeah.
Like, I remember I went to a personal development workshop a few years ago, actually when I was heavily pregnant with my last wee one. Shout out to Libby Robertson. It was a very cool workshop. And there was an exercise where you had to, like, you were paired up and you had to, like, stare at each other, and you kind of, I can't remember the full brief, but it was along the lines of you were just kind of tuning into each other. And the person was like, wow, I just feel so much sadness in you. She was like, I just feel like this pain. And at the time, especially because I was in a pretty happy state of my life, I was like, this bitch is projecting. I was like, nah. I was like, oh, so she's obviously very sad. And so she's seeing that in other people. I was like, oh yeah, cool, interesting. That's so interesting. But like completely dismissing it. And then like, it was only in hindsight that I realized that yes, while I was in a good stage of my life, there was still like, I hadn't fully processed the dark night of my soul. And even though it had happened a year, maybe 2 years previously, there was still this big vat, like this unhealed wound within me,
yep,
that people that are intuitive could totally pick up on. But what was, you know, at the tip of the iceberg, what was happening in my mind, I did feel positive. Like, I was thinking positive things. I was just about to have a baby. I was feeling good about all that sort of stuff, love of my life, all that. But there was that big raw stuff and emotion within me that I couldn't even resonate with it. Like, when it was presented in front of me, if she had of like read my thoughts, I would have been gaslighting her. Like, I would have been like, oh, cute. Yeah, That's a you thing, not a me thing, but thanks.
Yep. Do you know what? I had the exact same experience last year. So my brother passed away, right, 2007, and on his anniversary, I always do something. And over in Stokes Valley, there's this like monastery place. Have you been there?
Yeah.
And I went up there.
Actually, I don't know if I've been there, but I know of it and I've driven past it.
Yeah, it's gorgeous. Like, temples, like really sacred. And I went up there with my friend who had just lost her sister and her best friend. It was like crazy time. And I was like, oh yeah, I'm positive, I'm strong. And I posted like behind the scenes on my story, and someone said that, I can feel how sad you are. And I was like, like, what? No, I'm positive. Like, I'm a mindset coach. Like, don't, you know? And then, but it's the unconscious stuff. It doesn't matter. The conscious is only 5%. So we can sit here and like, no, I'm positive and I'm grateful and everything's amazing. But of course I had sadness. Like, it was my brother's anniversary. Like, of course. But it's like, it was interesting because it's like the meaning that we assign to that, right? Like, why are we so offended that we're human and that people can see it? Because that's actually our power, like our ability to articulate what other people feel and make it okay for them to feel the same thing.
Yeah.
Like, there's a real power in that. And that's what people message us about. Like, these episodes, like, oh my gosh, I totally relate to that.
Yeah.
Happens all the time. But it's interesting. And but that's like another level for us, right? Like, our own judgment of what, we're not perfect all the time. We don't have 100% perfect thoughts.
No, it's so deeply ingrained, eh? Like, we can know this stuff and we can practice this stuff. And at every new level or like new opportunity for growth, aka shit hitting the fan, it's like so easy to forget it because it's like life meets us at the level that we're at.
Yeah.
you know, and our unconscious, as it tries to like pierce through to our conscious mind, it like meets us at the level that we're at. And it's just so easy. I feel like the more you know, the stupider you can be sometimes when it comes to this stuff, because it's so easy to like reason your way out of it.
Yeah. Yes.
And to be like, no, 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 I've got these tools, I've got these techniques, I'm fine.
Yeah.
But like, yeah.
Yeah, and just to 180 what you said before, like about the feeling thing, it's so easy to sit in our mind and intellectualize stuff and not feel it. And that's what we can do, because we can explain, oh, this happened because of this and this trauma and this and that. And but it's like, actually, just feel your feelings. Just feel it. But that's what we're actually avoiding. And it's wild when you learn like what 90 seconds it takes for a feeling to run through the course of our body. And so many of us have run our entire lives to avoid 90 seconds of discomfort that would totally change our whole life.
It's crazy, eh? Like that people will spend days and weeks and months and even years in moods because they won't actually feel like the raw highs and lows of emotion.
Yeah.
And I don't know, like even when I suppressed my feelings and stuff, I still remember, like, you know, when I was in high school and various times throughout my 20s, when I was in that raw emotion, even though I would try and avoid it as much as possible, there was that part of me that still freaking loved it. Because, like, those moments feel so significant.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I can think of times, you know, going through a breakup when I was 16 and just like it was raining and sobbing on the steering wheel, or like, you know, when I was in my mid-20s, like crying on Island Bay Beach under a full moon, just like, why does no one love me? And even though it was like so raw at the time, there is that power in heightened emotions that when you're in it, you're like, this is significant.
Yeah.
Like there's so much of life that actually we won't remember and we're going through the motions. But when we have those moments of like intense emotion, you can feel the power in it. Like it feels significant.
Yep. 100%. And you know something's about to happen. It's like the more intense it is, the bigger the breakthrough.
Yeah.
But there's also like a real peace that comes with it. And that's something I've noticed too. Like now, like I'll just let it hit me like a truck. Whatever it is, I'll just be like, okay, here we go. Like time for another level up. But it's like, even when you feel crap or you feel all the really painful stuff, there's still a peace in it because you're present. There's no part of you that's running from yourself. And I find that so liberating. And I feel like it's like the greatest act of self-love that we could harness, like to actually let yourself feel everything without judgment, without assigning some negative meaning to it, but to just be like, okay, this is here for me now. So I'm going to honor it and show it for myself. Life-changing.
Yeah, and like you said, it's that resistance to it that causes the tension.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when we're not in resistance and when we're flowing with the emotion, it's actually pretty easy.
Yeah.
Like, if we're feeling, like, incredibly angry and we're present with that emotion, it's actually kind of fun. It's, you know, like, as women, we feel powerful, and so often we've been conditioned as women to not be with our anger and with our rage. We very often, like, automatically turn it into sadness and tears. Like, I know there have been so many times when I've been so angry and without meaning to, tears come out of my eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Because sadness is so much more socially acceptable for women.
Yeah.
And vice versa with men, so often when they're sad, they get angry.
Yeah.
You know, because that's what they've been conditioned as acceptable. But one thing I find myself saying quite a lot is that, like, a pity party is still a party if you're happy to be there, you know, and like actually being in your feelings is like a good time. There would be very little Taylor Swift music if if it weren't for her feeling her feelings.
That is true.
You know,
that is true.
I don't know if like jazz would exist, you know, like if the full spectrum of human, would I be sad? I don't know. I mean, scoop up, up, you know, I like it, but you know, it's just, I love that these conversations though are becoming more and more commonplace. And like, even having been in a workplace, I sort of noticed a difference coming back to a post-COVID workplace where so much had changed. Maybe it's because I was surrounded by women, but there were so many more conversations around like well-being and feeling our feelings. Like, I remember even there was a time this year where, and it was just a small team I was working in, but we did like our weekly catch up on a Monday morning and we always do a well-being round. And I tried to explain what was going on for me and I just started crying. and I just cried and I was like, I'm fine, but I'm just feeling all these feelings. Yeah. And then within a day or two, I felt so good about the exact thing I'd been crying about, because I needed it to hit that enough's enough moment. Was there a full moon? Yes. I was about to say, was my period due? Probably, but I was pregnant. But like, sometimes like we deprive ourselves of that enough's enough emotional break, but like that's when the clarity comes, or like that's when the resolution to be like, enough's enough, even if there are those emotions like shame.
Yep.
If we feel that shame so deeply, we feel genuinely compelled to take better actions.
Yeah.
But when we like just push it down, like, oh, I don't want to feel that, I don't want to manifest from that place, we don't reach that like necessary rock bottom to like launch off.
Yeah. 100%. And we don't learn the lessons.
I know.
Self-awareness. Yay.
I know. So are there any sort of experiences you can think of, whether it's through yourself, like through your own life, or through someone you've worked with, where like not like, or just basically pushing the full spectrum of emotions where that's bit you in the butt? Because I find that interesting. Like, I can see examples throughout my own life where like not feeling my feelings has led to negative results. Do you have any of those, or like have you seen those in any of the people you've worked with?
I mean, how much time do you have?
All the time.
But do you know what? It's not people I work with, because people that I work with, it's the opposite of avoiding your feelings. Yeah. It's showing up for them. People that hire a coach to like get results are not running from themselves. They're running towards what they want, you know? Do you know what? I'm going to talk about my family here.
Do it.
My parents, yeah. Both of them spend a lifetime. So my mum is a covert narcissist. And so she spent her life.
I wonder if that could fit on a business card. It's actually quite a cool title.
Like a cool band name or something.
Hi, I'm Sharon, covert narcissist. I don't actually know what your mum's name is. But
And my dad is a literal avoidant. So what that has looked like in reality, and can I go dark here?
Yeah, go dark.
Because this is, this has been a real, like, massive part of my own healing journey, is being able to separate their horrendous behavior from my value as a human being. And when you have two parents that choose themselves and they avoid discomfort and they avoid taking accountability for anything and they literally run from anything that's not about them or comfortable, it teaches you some pretty interesting lessons as a little kid when you're trying to make sense of, why do my parents not care about me, right? Mm. So in the context of this, and funny, I've been working through this a lot in relation to my dad lately. Like when I was, so I had a really interesting mental health history because, well, my life, like as a kid, you know, I had these two parents and then my brother died and then lot like domestic violence and, you know, just so much stuff.
True.
And no one to help, no one to talk to, like you just had to keep going, you know. And so I really struggled. Depression, anxiety, like massive panic attacks, but depression especially, like I was dark, like I got very close a couple of times. But there was one time, and I would have been about 20, 21, and I wanted to overdose, and I'd found like a bunch of pills and stuff. And I was really drunk and I was alone, right? I'd just come back from the States. Like, you know, when you change and no one else has changed and you don't really fit into your life anymore. And like, it's just so isolating. And so I called my dad because I freaked out. I was so scared. I was like, oh my God. Like, and I called my dad who was 20 minutes down the road and I told him what's going on. And I'll never forget what he said ever. And he said, it's really hard for me to hear you like this. And I was like, oh, it's really fun being like this. Like, it's really fun feeling like this. And like the courage that it had taken for me to ask for help from the person that's meant to protect you, right? But the thing with him is that he just avoids feeling. He avoids emotions. He avoids anything that's uncomfortable. He runs. I've seen him do worse things to other people, which I'm not going to speak about on here, but like just unforgivable things. And it's like, that's what happens. And then you get to, you know, 60 something and you're alone and you've got anyone that's amazing that comes into your life, you sabotage it because healthy people don't put up with this sort of behavior. And so, that's one example of what that's like. I mean, an entire lifetime of using external substances and things to avoid feeling what I believe is shame, because at the root of avoidant behavior is shame.
Yeah. And that totally makes sense. You know, like if the people that, you know, one would hope are the ones that condition your subconscious, that are designed to make you feel loved, to make you feel safe, to make you feel secure, if they're not in a position to do that, then it makes so much sense that from a young age you're like, well, I can't be good enough, because if I were, then I would have this love, I would have this care, I would have this support. No doubt you saw that with your friends and your friends' parents, you know, that yeah. they were just loved in a normal way, not even over the top, just like normal base level needs met, I care about you, I'll show up for you.
Yeah.
When those things happen to you completely outside of your control, it totally makes sense why we're having a malfunction here, folks. She just wants to love you, Mon.
I know.
My beautiful dog, who she was, Lexi was, she was separated from her mum at it, and this is going on the podcast. She was separated from her mum like way, way, way too early. And so she's always Aww. Been like super affectionate. Oh, she is so cute. And also when my partner got her, he was single, he was alone, he'd bought a house in Featherston, he didn't know anyone here. He was paying a mortgage by himself, didn't have much money. So he was also in quite like a sad state.
Yeah.
So he poured a lot of love and affection into her. So from a young age, she's just been super clingy. Lexi, down. Come on. Come on. Come on.
She's so just sweet though. Her. She's not annoying clingy. She's very lovable.
Yeah, most of the time, aren't we all? Anyway, don't be afraid to just show your boundaries, Brandon. Anyway.
Practice saying no.
But it's one of those things, and I don't know what your kind of view about that is, because, you know, there are so many different schools of thought around why we have the parents that we have.
Mm-hmm.
Say, for instance, I'm kind of an example of riding the coattails of someone else's transformation. Like in terms of with my parents, I have very loving and supportive parents that were emotionally available. I mean, Dad's still a bloke. And, you know, he'll still like, you know, he'll sort of choke out the words when he's trying to say nice stuff. You know, always iffy. Like he's great. Whereas Mum was like overly demonstrative, super warm, like that archetypical mama energy.
Yeah.
And whereas for both of them, you know, that is particularly on the maternal side, they didn't really have those examples of that warm motherly energy that they so craved. And so for them, it was very intentional when they decided to have kids that they wanted to have like that warm home environment
yep.
where their kids felt loved and accepted. And so because of that, it's just been so much easier. Like, we all have insecurities. No person goes through unscathed. And I think that while I may have had confidence and felt good enough in certain areas, you know, like we all have those pockets that it just, you know, that are more difficult. So how do you kind of conceptualize that for yourself now? Like,
yeah. I mean, it's so crazy that we're having this conversation, because this is literally what I'm working on in my own life right now. Like, you can't make it up. So, do you know what? Like, the feeling thing is a big thing, right? I literally recorded a video about this a couple of days ago, talking about my process of moving through this. Because I feel like we really have to balance the masculine and the feminine, you know, like the head and the heart. Because if I was to sit in my feelings about this all the time, I would never get out of bed. But also,
how good is bed though? You know,
bed is life. Don't enable me right now. but it's like the big picture stuff. So like exactly like you said, I kind of zoom out and I think about it like I believe that we choose our parents. So I'm like, okay, so I've chosen this. I've chosen these parents. So I obviously did it for a reason. And I know as well that because of the experiences that I had, and such a strong desire to save myself and to end these cycles, that's what's led to everything. I have goosebumps. Like, it makes me want to cry. But, you know, like, I wouldn't have created this podcast. I wouldn't have created my whole business. I wouldn't have learned all these subconscious tools and things. It was to save myself. It was, I looked at this and I was like, this will not be my life. This will not be my cycle. My children will not know this. And it's like, you've got both my parents. It's like, I'm ending these cycles on both lines. This is how I sit with this. Like, that, yeah, it sucks. And I have moments, like, I have moments where I feel such FOMO. And, like, imagine what it would be like. Like, TikTok's actually a real big trigger for this. You see, like, beautiful parents, you know, supporting, like, you know, you, I don't know, your kid is graduating and your dad's, like, crying in the audience. And I always think, man, it'd be so amazing to have a parent that actually cared like that. Like,
see me around my son, you'll be triggered.
Yeah, don't be triggered. But, you know, the crazy thing is, like, how much do I post online? Like, people know a lot about me because I share a lot. My dad did not know that my podcast was on the radio a couple of months ago. He didn't even know that.
To be fair, I don't know if my dad knows. Like, he probably does. He knows. Mum would have told him.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's not really that techno.
But, like, if you ask my dad, what do I do for a living, he couldn't tell you.
That's different.
He doesn't know. He couldn't tell you who my best friend is. He couldn't tell you anything. And it's like, that's what I mean. It's not like a little detail. It's all of the details. And yeah, so I was like, okay, imagine having a parent. Like, I wonder how much further I could have gone if I'd had, like, people behind me that supported me. But then I also, like, you can't really go down that, yeah, that train of thinking.
Because would you have had that drive, no, and that fire up your butt,
yeah,
if you hadn't?
I wouldn't.
And it's going to be hard, though, because it's like, I know that in those moments, like, it's so hard having to be the strong one, and it's hard to be like, why do I have to, and this is, you know, like that sort of little kid within us that's just like, why do I have to be the one? Like, why do I have to bear, yeah, this all? Why do I have to do it all on my own? It's not fair.
Yeah.
And that's all true. Like, it's not fair, but it's like, that's the stuff that forges, like, it forges us in the fire. Like, that's when our character is built. And, yeah, even though, you know, we all have different traumas and experiences, and for me, I think what I found hard about my darkness when it sort of emerged and unfolded in my life was that it felt like I'd done it to myself. You know, like, when you do feel like you're, which, you know, has its, yeah, own sort of form of self-loathing, when you're like, you know, I had everything I needed in front of me and I still had a way to cock it up. You know, so we all kind of have those things, but it's so powerful when you move out the other side of it. So, yeah, what does it make you want? Like, you know, with all that stuff, what does it make you want?
World, like, domination. I'm not joking.
Yeah, I can't hear that without thinking of Pinky and the Brain.
I know. And that's, yeah, that's the kind of the whole point. It's like, it's funny, but it's also quite polarizing, right? Because people that are like, oh, I have big visions and big dreams, like, they're going to be attracted. People that are not are going to run. And that's kind of what I want. Mm. but basically, I mean, the thing is that when you learn, like, when you get out of these cycles and when you see they're actually starting to show up in your life, like, in terms of the relationships, and it's the smallest things, like, and I mean real basic stuff that most people would never even think about. Setting a boundary, asking for help, and believing that you're worthy of it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, letting someone help you without feeling like a burden. The first time that happened, I cried for like 2 days. I was like, whoa, like, this is the win. Like, we could look at material wins and stuff, which are amazing, but it's like, that win, I just ended a cycle, like a, yeah, generational cycle. That is the win. So it's like, when you learn how to do that,
yeah,
and you learn how to, like, let people help you, and you start breaking these things one by one, you want to help as many people get out of it as possible.
Yeah, and so many people need help with that, like, regardless of whether there's big T trauma, I think so many people can relate, often, yeah, in women as well, you know, like, more women listen to this podcast, like, setting boundaries, asking for help, not feeling like a burden. Those are all things that I have to actively, like, practice bravery. Yep. Asking for someone to do something for me,
yep,
is still an edge, and I'm so much better at it than I was.
Yep.
And I noticed that with my last, with the community development program I was running, it was so interesting to see, you know, these patterns kind of reflected back to me of how I just wanted to do everything by myself because I didn't want to be a burden to others. I didn't want to make people do things for me, even when it was their job.
Yeah.
Like, you know,
Yeah.
You have comms advisors, and here I am trying to write things because I didn't want to make them do stuff. And just realizing, and, you know, maybe part of that's perfectionism, you know, stemming from not enoughness, and it has to be perfect, otherwise it's not good enough.
Yeah.
But, like, realizing how hard it actually is and how vulnerable it feels. And I guess it does come down to that worthiness piece of feeling like I have the right to exist in this world.
Yeah.
I have the right to take up space.
Yeah.
Especially when we're happy to do things for other people.
And that is the turning point. That in the beginning, when I was kind of making these unconscious patterns conscious, I was like, how would I respond if this was my friend? Like, if my friend was going through what I'm going through right now and she didn't call me, I'd be pissed. Like, I'd be so upset. So it was a real conscious thing. And through the end of my relationship with my mum, this was when I was really like, I need to be brave here because I am dying inside. Like, this is like the worst pain I've ever gone through. I need to tell people. I need to talk to people. And the love that I was met with, again, just made me cry. Because I was like, I was not used to that. You know, but if you're not raised with it, it's so unfamiliar.
Yeah.
And because you're not raised with it, you then build all of these, you know, subconscious patterns. So you attract. So my whole life was just relationships with people who reinforced my beliefs of feeling unworthy, feeling like a burden, not feeling good enough. And so to see, again, that I'd broken that pattern, like that I'm choosing to share, I'm choosing to let people in, and not just anyone, like people that are, you know, that are worth it. Like, we don't just go around sharing our innermost stuff with anyone. But the way that they stepped up for me, I was like, wow, this is normal. Like, when you're going through something, the people in your life are meant to support you. And it sounds so basic when I say it out loud, but it was like earth shattering for me. I was like, oh my gosh, if I'm sad, I actually get to receive support. What? It's nuts, eh? But it was such a shift. Or like the first time that I set a boundary and it was met with love, not being like gaslit or stonewalled for 3 days, or, you know, being, I don't know, like, so many things had happened, screamed at, yelled at, abused, manipulated, like, to actually just say, hey, this is how I'm feeling, da 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 da, and then be like, oh, I totally understand, I'm sorry, like, what? Like, what? And I was sitting in fight or flight on my floor, and I remember I did this with my ex-partner. This was when I really started getting brave, like, I know we've talked about him a little bit, but I was like, because this is when all of these cycles really became, like, dominant. They were at the forefront. I was like, wow, I have so many unconscious things here that are being mirrored back to me right now. And I was like, I need to start asking for what I want. Like, I need to start accepting help. I need to put it into practice, you know? And I remember sitting on my floor, my bedroom, so dramatic. The rain, no, just kidding. The tiny violins in the corner.
Coldplay was playing in the background.
But, like, especially I think when you're dealing with like narcissists and stuff who constantly make you question your sense of truth and reality, like you double, like you guess yourself, you know, like all the time you're always thinking like, is this justified? Is this right? And so I talked to my friend and I was like, I need to set a boundary here. I'm really unhappy about this. And I was shaking. I was in fight or flight on my floor, but like, I know enough of this stuff. So I was like, okay, what am I going to do? Like, I either move forward or I go back. And I was like, we have not come this far to go back. So I set the boundary and it was fine. And my friend who had also been in narcissistic relationships and stuff, she was like, I remember that so well. The first time, like, because your nervous system remembers, that's the thing. And like, again, to come back to
that's the homeostasis for the nervous system as well. Yes. It's like, that's the comfort zone. It actually feels a bit unsafe and easy to be untrusting when people are showing genuine love and kindness. Yeah. Like, what's the angle?
But also like the feeling stuff, to come back to that, like when we're giving ourselves permission to feel and be present, then we're actually in tune with our truth. And like, when my nervous system was like, do not speak up because terrible things will happen. What are you doing? Be a people pleaser. Shh. Like, you know, and your mind screams at you like, da 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 da, but you're a burden, all this old crap. And it's like that right before these breakthroughs, that inner critic, that voice gets loud and it's judgmental and it is like full of stuff because it's trying to keep you safe. But big, like these are massive moments and like so scary. But then you do it and it's like, oh, the world didn't end. Like, but it's been such a weird journey learning what is normal. I know that sounds so basic again, but it's like learning that you can actually be upset with someone and express that you're unhappy about something, and it's not the end of the world.
Yeah, and that relationship can still be good and healthy.
Yes.
Like, that's something I try and Jack and I, my four-year-old, talk about a lot, just in terms of, you know, it's okay to have big feelings towards each other, and we love each other, and that's fine.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's okay. If he's angry at me because I don't want to give him snacks, you know, I'm like, we need to have some filling food, you know, we need to get some nutrients in there, and he's angry at me. It's like, it's okay, bud, like, you can be angry at me. I love you. I'm still not giving you the snack.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's all good. We're cool, but nah.
Yeah.
And it's just going to be so exciting as well to see the how things compound over time based on those shifts, because they're massive.
Yeah.
They are massive, massive shifts. And as well, like, you know, I think a lot of people are big on, you know, the sort of dynamics that we attract. And there's validity to that, but, like, I'm much more interested in what we put up with rather than what we attract. You know, like, as in,
yes,
attractive people will attract a broad range of people, but it's like, who are those people we keep entertaining? Yep. And when you're good at setting boundaries, when you have that strong sense of self-worth, when you believe in your truth and you're like, well, there's no such thing as objective reality, but this is my genuine experience. When we're grounded in that, we are repellent. Like, not repellent, but it's just like maybe even repulsive to people that have those insecure narcissistic attachment styles, because they need someone that's going to see the world in the same way they do. They're going to need someone that boosts their ego, because deep down they feel so little and small,
yeah,
that they need someone that's going to just feed into them.
Yeah.
Whereas when we're like sure and certain, like there's a reason why. And, you know, I don't really like, because I've had a fortunate life in many ways, I don't really like throwing around the word narcissist, but I was in a relationship when I was 17 with someone that, in hindsight, textbook narcissist. But, I mean, where I feel a little bit about it is because I'm like, you know, sweet kid, lot of stuff going on in the home life, very poor role modeling of what was normal, very low sense of self-worth underneath all this. So I find it kind of, I don't want to label him as that, because I can see that he was a kid, and you know, 40-year-olds can be kids, you know, like, they're still at that age. But there's a reason why the only person like that I've dated was fresh on the breakup of, like, my first love that I didn't feel fully good enough for, that I was, like, still kind of in that wounded state, and I just wanted to be loved. There's a reason why the only person with that kind of pattern showed up at that time of my life.
Yeah.
And I had so many opportunities to exit before it even began.
Yeah.
And I stayed there. It wasn't what I attracted. It was what I kept putting up with.
Yeah.
Because of where I was at in my life.
Yeah. I love this. And I think, again, this is why I geek out so much about the subconscious mind, because we attract based on our subconscious. So if you were feeling unworthy and not good enough, you attracted someone that reflected that back to you. But this is, like, where our power comes in, right? To look at what's showing up and then choose. Do I tolerate this? Do I allow this? Like, let's be honest, so many of us have had some sort of relationship like that. And as horrible as it was such a catalyst for us to be like, I refuse. Like, I'm not going to live like this. I'm not doing this. Like, nah, I'm going to heal whatever part of me, like, allowed this to happen. I've actually just done a two-part series on narcissism and healing from toxic relationships. Literally yesterday was the part two. So wild, again, that we're having this conversation. But it's like, it's such a catalyst for growth. And it's like, on the flip side, you know, we've come out from all this trauma and all this pain and all this stuff. But it's like, to build ourselves up. And it takes so much courage to do that, to actually get ourselves into this energy of queen vibes. Like, we do not tolerate people who throw us crumbs or give us minimum input, like, or effort. Like, it's not attractive. It should be such a turn off, because it's disgusting behavior. Yeah. To be treated like an option or like we don't matter, that's gross. But this is where that work comes in, because if you're used to that, it's very easy to just allow or to believe, like, oh, they're treating me like this because I'm not worthy. But actually, they're treating you like that because you allow it. And as brutal as that is, and I mean, I say that as someone that's walked this path, Like, my parents gave me a really crappy template, but until I chose to end those cycles and set mad boundaries and cull a lot of people out of my life, nothing was going to change. It's their limitation, their trauma, their pain. It's like, I'm not going to continue to suffer because they chose not to do the work. I'm not going to punish myself because of their choices. Screw that.
Yeah, totally. And it as well, like, I know that it's so much easier said than done, but so, at some point it stops even becoming a self-worth thing and it just becomes like a, what do I want to experience?
Yeah.
Whether I'm worthy or not, whether it's going to happen or not,
yeah,
whether this man that I want to manifest or the situation I want to manifest, it's like, regardless of my objective self-worth, which isn't a real thing anyway, like, what do I want? Like, just what do I want to experience?
Yeah.
Like, it, and it's moving towards that.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't want that.
Yeah. I do think they go hand in hand, though, because if, like, when it's just sort of intrinsic, like, you just know, like, yeah, I'm awesome. Like, and not in a conceited way, but just like, yeah, of course I deserve people to treat me well. Like, I'm a really good person. It kind of, you know, it fits. It comes together because then we just naturally act that. It's not about, like, am I worthy? It's more like, you just embody it because of course you deserve that. Of course you do. Every single person does. Yeah. Yeah.
And I noticed that kind of shift within me really quickly before I met Chris was like, I got super clear on what I wanted and I wasn't interested in, like, I think prior to that, I'd kind of got attracted to people and, you know, you try and fit them into what you want them to be, regardless of what stage of their life they're at, what they're looking for, whatever. Like, you get enamored by the person. And whereas, like, before I met Chris, I was like, there are so many interesting people in the world. There are so many beautiful men in this world. There are so many, like, you know, people that it's great to get along with or whatever. But I'm only interested in someone who wants to do life with me. Like, so no matter how good looking they are, no matter how great their chat is or anything like that, I'm not interested in them unless they actually want to do life with someone and unless they want to do life with me too.
Yeah.
And it's so much easier from that place, like from a place of neutrality, because I think prior to that, like, there were some people I was interested in that just weren't in the stage of their life where they were looking for something serious. And then you bring in self-worth when it's not even a question of self-worth. You're like, if I were good enough, they'd want me to be their forever person. Like, completely undervaluing the fact that we all have our own different life path. Them not wanting to be in a committed relationship and build a life with someone is so valid.
Yeah.
There are times in my life when I'm not going to use the F-bomb on podcast because I've turned a new leaf. I've been the F-boy.
Yeah.
I've been the F-girl because I wasn't in that stage of my life where I wanted to commit. I was still in that experiential phase, and I'm someone who, like, I can't just go, I tried it once, didn't work. I can't go from a relationship to a relationship, and even then it was like 6 months, but, like, for me, I need, like, solid 2 years, you know, like, to, like, decondition. I am a projector in human design. I've got a completely open sacral, you know, so it's just like, I need a lot of time to decompress. And so it was like, it was only when I got to that point where I was like, it's not about a self-worth thing. It's about a compatibility thing. Like, do we want the same things? That it's like, things just happened so easily.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. I can't wait until after we finish this podcast to talk boy stuff. To go into the specifics.
And we shall.
Sorry, listeners, you'll never get it. Actually, probably if you listen to Mon's podcast, I feel like she probably would
come back in a couple of months details. And I'll update you on everything.
She'll give you the full 411. Now, before we wrap up this conversation, because like I said, I want to talk boys offline, is there anything else you feel compelled to share or say or reflect on?
Do you know what? I actually just want to add on to something you just said, which was so potent, about making things mean, you know, talking about our self-worth and making other people's behavior mean something about us. We do this all the time. So many people do this. Like, you treat me like this because obviously I'm not. No, that's just a confirmation of our own beliefs. And I think we can all save so much time and heartache when we just accept what's there. Like, oh, this person doesn't want to commit to me. Okay, then they're obviously not my person. such a different belief, such an empowering belief. Oh, this person is obviously not my person. I'm actually grateful to see that now because my person is coming. So I am going to like love and honor myself enough to walk away, not to beg them to love me, but also I think to understand that everyone is a mirror for us. And so if we are finding ourselves in that situation where we're like, no, I really want to change you, or I know deep down that you're my twin flame, but it's like, I know deep down that you're my soulmate, so I know that we're meant to be. Well, no, if they're meant to be, it'll just be.
Yeah.
Anything that's meant for us just flows, right? It's not this effort where we're holding on and clinging on.
Yeah, and if you're a feminine energied woman or a feminine energied being who's attracted to masculine energied beings, being in the energy of convincing and trying to be perfect so that you can change their minds feels disgusting.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's actually quite masculine because it's chasing.
So masculine.
But it's wounded masculine. Yeah. The divine feminine, and this is our goal for all of us, right, is to be in our queen energy.
Yeah.
Remembering that, like, no one else on earth is us. No one compares to us. The chances of us being here are 1 in 400 trillion. One of a kind. Why would we try to be someone else? Why are we comparing ourselves to each other when we're born to be different? Like, and I think that's the turning point when you can actually look at yourself and accept, like, I'm actually amazing.
Yeah.
And again, not in a conceited way, but it's so backwards. Our whole society teaches us to be, self-deprecating. And like, you know, that we're encouraged to be humble, but it's like, but then we also understand that the mind will attract what you are. So if you're humble and play it small and feel unworthy, you're going to attract more of that. But if you can step into the space of self-love and self-worth, then magical things happen.
Amen, sister.
Yeah.
And just as a final little note, like when Chris and I fell in love, it honestly just felt like green lights all the way. Like, we all have different paths to walk in relationship. And for some people, you know, there are certain things that haven't been resolved while they were single, so it needs to be hashed out in relationship. And I'm a big believer that, like, for me at least, like 80% of the work you do by yourself, and then there's that piece, that interrelational piece that can't be done by ourselves. We need to get into the arena. But falling in love with him was so easy because I was resolute that I was only available for someone that was willing to love me, for someone that was willing to show up for me, for putting the effort. And so the experience of dating him was so different from any other sort of situationship or dating experience I'd had, because I felt like I was just being myself. I was enjoying his company. And then I would say yes to his plans.
Yeah.
You know, like, there was no anxiety of like, where is this going? At the end of every date, he was locking in when we'd see each other next, because he wanted to see me. Like, you know, from the start, he was very clear that it's like, you know, this whole dating thing of dating multiple people at once doesn't work for me. I'm just going to see you. And until we decide whether that's it or we don't want to see each other. And I was non-committal, and a bit of an Aquarius over here. And I was like, that's cool. But like, you know, sort of doing a bit of dating and whatever. And, you know, very quickly it was like, I don't want to see any of these other basic bitches. Like, I just want to be with him.
Yeah.
But it was like, it was so different just feeling chosen. And that came from that place of worthiness of like, and you know, when I wasn't just, you know, it's not like I wasn't putting in effort. It's just that my effort was enjoying his company. My effort was being present, having that sparkle in my eye, having fun with him.
Yeah.
And masculine energy beings, they feed off that feminine presence, you know? And so it's like my contribution was me being there, being a bloody delight. He lapped it up.
Yeah.
And, you know, like the hunter with his prey, he knew that like he wanted to keep going in on that. And so the experience for me, like the inner experience of that, was so soothing. Like, it was really nice. It wasn't a jarring experience falling in love with him. It wasn't scary.
Yeah.
It was kind of scary how easy it was.
Yeah.
So it's just, it's nice to know that, and you know, same girl that, you know, a year previously was crying on Island Bay Beach because no one would love me because I was in a situation where I was And it's funny how in those moments, how we like conveniently overlook the guys that are like interested in you and you're not interested in them. We're like, no one will love me. But it's like, but I want this one very specific person who at the time I thought was my twin flame. And yep. we've talked about this. Yeah. Yeah. because I just liked the idea of being with him. Even though he wasn't in a state of his life where he was able and willing to commit. And in hindsight with how things have unfolded, I'm very glad that that didn't happen and I'm not a widow and all these sorts of things. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's just super interesting what happens when we choose ourselves.
Only good comes from it.
Yes, exactly.
But sometimes things have to crumble first.
Yeah. Yeah, which is great because like what a boring story of our life. If it was just like, things are good.
Yeah.
Things are good. Oh, wait. You'll never guess what happened. Things got good. It's like, no one wants to read that story. It's just that when we're in it, like, our ego doesn't like the highs and the... Like, it doesn't like the lows. Yeah. It doesn't like those little plot twists.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, like, when you choose... When you've gone from being, like, a doormat and a people pleaser and begging people to give you the bare minimum, and then you start choosing yourself, there's a very confronting time period. And a lot of really gross emotions will come up. Shame's a big one. And just like, I actually got rage. I was so angry because I was angry at myself as well. Like, I can't believe I put up with this. I can't believe I allowed this. What was I thinking? Like, yeah. What is wrong with me? And then, yeah. And then the people that are used to you being a certain way don't like it, obviously, when all of a sudden you're not available. But then what was so interesting was that when I raised my standards, a lot of people stepped up. And I was like, huh, interesting. There are some people that fall away and that's fine. They're not going to come with you. That's fine. Like, not everyone's going to be there.
I feel like that was when I just slid back into your DMs as well. I'm like, hey, girlfriend, it's been a while.
But it literally was. Like, because everyone can feel the shift in your energy, right? It's like a beacon. You step up and you're like, you remember who you are. You embody that internally. Of course it's going to be reflected back to you.
Yeah.
Of course. Yeah.
I love this. I love this. And I will put links to the various things in the show notes. But can you do a little plug for yourself of just telling you where people can find you and into your world and all that sort of stuff?
A little plug. Sure.
Or a big one.
So TikTok and Instagram is the best place to find me, at the Monica Ferguson, 1S in Ferguson. And then, World Domination Podcast on iTunes and Spotify. Those are the places that I'm most active. So, yeah.
Yay. Come connect. Thank you for being here, my love.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you, everyone, for listening. I know you will have got a lot out of this conversation. If you didn't, you would have stopped tuning in about 5 minutes into the thing. So the fact that you're listening to this right now, you obviously love it. And we got to go because Mon and I need to talk boys. So love you. Bye.
Bye.